podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Here's a 40-20 attempt. And it's not bad.
Oh,
it is. It's there. It just kept going and going.
These clappers, I don't know how they work. And James has just done it off air, and he's not managed to do it properly either. He's supposed to bang it against something hard, so we bang it against a table. Welcome to 40-20 Live. The exciting news is last week's International Finale Special podcast is 30th in the podcast charts as an episode, above a load of Rabuni ones, but below James Graham talking to Yvonne Sampson. So, got to work harder. Got to work harder.
We've got parking, though.
We've got parking. We've got Weight Watchers knock off Tunnock's Caramel Wafers, which you didn't see advertised at the Rugby League this weekend. We haven't got any part of that commercial deal, have we? You spoke to RL Commercial yesterday.
I can't believe how we haven't. I mean, surely we are promoted. The two cannot be coincidental.
We really ought to remove the pre-advertising from the
sure.
both, shouldn't we?
Should.
Until they pay.
Yeah. I should turn the ball around so it doesn't say Betfred at the front as well. I've been abused on Twitter. So, a couple of weeks ago, when did Craig Lingard get appointed at Castleford?
Oh, wow, about 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, 17th of October. So I said they should have had a special offer on bucket hats to go with the announcement. And someone's tweeted in saying, will they have a size big enough to cover your stupid something haircut sideshow, Bob? That's a bit harsh, isn't it? It's not a haircut.
Yes, but, clearly not a haircut.
But as I walked into the building today, I was saying, you know, weren't you had a haircut? Right, I haven't got it done yet. Game breaker, or moment of the week, or whatever League Express call it. Surely the biggest moment of the game, England versus Tonga on Saturday, which is where we'll start.
Englishmen
versus Tonga.
Starting with Englishmen.
The biggest moment of that game, is that recording? I think it is. No, I don't think it is. The biggest moment, surely, of the weekend. Where's that locked? The biggest moment of the weekend, this is going to make a bright mess of the podcast, was surely...
it's on loop.
Chris Kendall falling over. That was the best bit of the weekend, wasn't it? Oh, Harry Newman's. Do you not see that? Harry Newman's drive. He fell over as he scored. How are we all after the weekend? Are we...
Do you know, it's always a great weekend when Australia have been thrashed.
Well, there is that as well.
What a great weekend for International Rugby League. Australia get beaten. PNG win at home in front of a sellout crowd. England whitewash Tonga. The England women win, not unexpectedly, but Wales were credible, bearing in mind that they'd been to France the week before. The wheelchair is the event. Mm. That was just sensational, even though, unfortunately, it wasn't the right result for England. Plus all the other international rugby league that went on, with the first ever international in Berlin. We've had the first women's international in Africa. And all of it is just uplifting, if you like, international dimensions of the sport.
What if you don't like international rugby league?
You're probably not tuning into this podcast.
No.
This season probably finished a few weeks ago.
we'll start with the England men, because it was the... It kind of worked, if we work back, and then we can talk about the whole series and the international autumn, 3 weeks, at the end. Tonga have been very disappointed, haven't they, Phil? Very. We've built this up as this great series between two nations, and England have, bar, what, one half of rugby, maybe two halves at St Helens. The two games I've been to have not been great. Unfortunately, that's my fault. I'm going to take the
blame. I think that is a fair charge to level at them. I think you also have to bear in mind that they're not blessed with sufficient squad depth at the moment. And if you take three or four big names out who didn't come over, that's probably not a surprise. Mm. And if you divorce the game this weekend from the rest of the series, it was by far the most entertaining game from an England perspective. I don't know whether that was deliberate or not, but it was almost as if, having won it, they went into the third game with the shackles taken off a little bit and played some lovely rugby.
It was probably England's best performance, I think, out from the three games. I think you're right, because they've got the series victory. Does that give them a little bit more freedom to play? Of course, George Williams was back, you know, in the half, so you'd have to say he had some influence.
Which you could see why, Sean Wayne was adamant that he was going to play, and that however well Mikey Lewis had played in the first couple of games, it was always going to be Harry Smith, who I think had his best game with Williams outside him, and Williams controlling that midfield, that clearly that was justified selection. I just thought, I don't know whether it's the players took it on themselves, but they looked like they were they're enjoying it a little bit more than the first two tests. And I think certainly the try scored by Elliot Whitehead, which was arguably the most emotional try of the afternoon on his final appearance, and the one by Harry Newman, which again got the biggest cheer because it's his first international try on his home ground, that they would have graced any game. They were really entertaining. And the crowd got behind it as well, and they appreciated it, which again we hadn't
seen. There was an atmosphere
there. Well, we hadn't seen or heard that much in St Helens or Huddersfield. Maybe that's because there wasn't that much to get excited about, but there certainly was at Headingley.
It was like Russ Abbott had turned up and brought with him his famed atmosphere. There's one for the team, which, as we know,
well, I remember Russ Abbott because
your eyebrows raised
this
goes
in the 80s.
I do remember Russ Abbott because we went to see him live. They had the Russ Abbott show, didn't they? So I'm showing my age there, but I don't remember the famed audience bit. But
atmosphere was. Wasn't it a great?
It looked good on TV.
Always looks good on TV.
Yeah, I thought the first game and the third game have come across well on TV in terms of the crowd. It was just because the stadium was so much bigger at Huddersfield, it didn't. But
anti-Huddersfield.
I mean, I've been talking about crowds. I didn't see much other than the highlights of the Australia-New Zealand game. There was hardly anybody there at Hamilton.
It's really weird. I mean, the cameras were on the other side to where the
crowd, like at Salford when they show the empty stand. Yeah.
But the really weird thing is that the same people that were tweeting, "It's a terrible crowd of 13,500 in New Zealand. It's a brilliant crowd of 15,500 at Headingley." You're going, there ain't a lot of difference.
Although it'd be interesting, had Tonga been playing in a game in Hamilton, it probably would have been
20. Yeah, and I think that with the whole thing about international rugby leagues, it's building from a base in New Zealand where there hasn't been really any rugby for two years, effectively. Mm. But that is the kind of result that is going to get people buying tickets for the Pacific Championships next time. So that, massive success. We get obsessed about crowds, you know, and who how many people have come, and is it a record and all that, you know. Just to enjoy the fact that Australia have been thrashed, however many people. And as somebody wrote, I was reading some of the reports coming in from New Zealand, that is going to be a game where there may well have only been 13,500 people there, but 4.5 million will say that.
and the more important numbers are the TV figures. And if they're good, then there might be more money coming from TV for International Rugby League. And we're all looking forward to next autumn when Samoa are coming. Or not, as Christian Wolf said, they might not come, which was quite good. It's a shame Christian Wolf didn't do his press conference before Sean Wayne, and then we could have all said to Sean Wayne, "Sean, you say Samoa are coming, but Christian Wolf says they're not," and then they could have had a fight in the car park. That would have been good.
Carried on their animosity.
Yeah. But it was England won. You can't take anything away from England's performances.
No, not at all.
I did enjoy the whole Mikey Lewis discourse in midweek, as if anyone thought he was going to play when George Williams has been in the squad. He wasn't dropped when he was suspended for the first two tests, and everyone knew because Sean Wayne said he was going to play. Forgetting that Mikey Lewis didn't have it. Cried on the telly, had a great first test, didn't have a great second test. People seem to have forgotten that fact, but he should have been in the squad because he's our own and he's not George Williams, who we don't like because he plays for Warrington.
I'm not 100% sure why Josh Thewlis and Morgan Smithers were called up not to play.
Not to play. They could have been on holiday or something.
Ash Handley being sent out to a 10,000 mile trip to not play.
Particularly if you've won your first two games, is surely your third game's the opportunity to give somebody a game to see how they perform, you know.
You're thinking like, I don't say a normal person, that makes me sound like Sean Wayne's not normal, but he wants to win, not at all costs, but he put his strongest team out regardless.
Yeah, and in some ways that is admirable, and that's what he's paid to do. His record, apart from the semi-final against Samoa, is virtually, is it something like 10 wins out of 12 or something like that, you know, that's what he's paid to do. So that sentiment doesn't come into it, but I just thought that it felt like a different occasion to a league game on Saturday, and that is what international should be. Should park your domestic season and then say, right, we've got, and you listen to the players, even the Tongan players, you certainly the New Zealand players that were all interviewed, the PNG players, and even the Fijians, Mike Kasivo was as big a star in PNG as all the PNG guys. They've loved it. They always keep saying when they played internationals, we need and want more of it. So
I think what was good though was, I think I was listening to the BBC commentary. They talked about, you know, next year that England are playing Samoa, the year after it's whatever that is. Is it the Down Under test series against Australia?
Yeah.
And then the World Cup the year after that. So
then actually, the Kiwis are coming in, and the Kangaroos are coming in, then it's another World Cup.
Yeah, and almost for the first time in my lifetime, I thought, actually, here's a calendar, something to look forward to, if it comes, because things do change, inevitably. But it's that sounded encouraging, that there is something to look forward to next year, and hopefully this is the start of something to
I just think
which
that
to build.
What we don't do as well as we should, and perhaps can't, purely because of the logistics, is the tickets for Samoa, if it is going to be Samoa, should have gone on sale at the end of the Tonga series. The venue should be announced. The corporate people who have seen, the wheelchair, which we'll talk about separately, it brought it home why LED advertising is far more important than people are prepared to give it credit for.
This is the hill we're dying on, these LED boards.
The 0.1, 0.25.
LED boards at the Leeds Arena, they were at the side of the pitch, opposite the cameras that were in action throughout the entire 2 hours that it was on the BBC. They have to have a premium value for all the advertisers that are on it. Now, if you can say to them, these are when the next wheelchair internationals are, this is when the next England running game international, sign up now.
I mean, it's from
a... And I know it's easy to sit here and say that, and the commercial world out there probably isn't quite as black and white as that, but if we've got the calendar, the other nuts and bolts that we need to put in are the fixtures and the commercial partners behind it.
I agree, and I think you're right. I haven't heard the story about it may or may not be Samoa, and hopefully that doesn't come true, but you're right, there should be now tickets available to buy for next year straight away.
At least we should know where the venues are.
Where it's going to be and the dates, and that is forward planning. Hopefully that's to come. But my only concern about Samoa is their performances in this specific tournament, and whether we may get something similar to what we've seen with Tonga. Because I do think Tonga have been disappointing. And you can only beat the team that's put in front of you. And England, I thought, generally have played well. Ultimately, the test always comes in against New Zealand and Australia. Clearly, they lost against Samoa in the semi-final at the World Cup. I'm not taking that away from him, but that was a World Cup where you get all your players on board, your strongest possible side. So the test still comes, I think, in 2 years' time when they go down under, because that's going to be a huge challenge to go and play Australia in their own backyard.
Can we afford the flights?
Especially as they're going to be wounded. Well, they can afford the flights, it's just what class of flight they're in.
Do they pay for the flights? Do the Australians pay for them? Is that okay?
Business class.
Because it's a bit of a...
But what usually happens in these
situations?
Yeah, what usually happens in these situations is that the host usually provides basic sort of cover, whether that be economy flights and sort of hotel accommodation and anything beyond that. So business class flights, it's usually topped up by, say, England. So Australia would probably pay for economy flights, and England would top up. But it'll all depend on the financial success of the tournament, I guess. I mean, one would imagine this hasn't made money as a tournament, and whether the Pacific Bowl has probably made money, probably not, based on what Steve Mascot was saying last week.
At the very least, it might have broken even. I don't know what crowd figures they needed, but they've had a 3/4 full Headingley, half full Huddersfield, and 2/3 full St Helens. You would hope that those figures would give them enough in terms of attendance, as well as whatever commercial income they've got from LEDs and anything else that it's I think is the term washed its face.
That is a phrase I've heard before. On bargain hunt, mainly. Well, that's the main thing.
I mean, the thing is, we've had what, anything up to nearly a million people at peak time watching it on the BBC, which again, to an unfamiliar audience who just watch an international and see England win, does it really matter whether Tonga were at full strength or not, played as well as they could have done it? One thing I noticed from the women's international was that the young, predominantly young, shouting crowd weren't in any way put off by the fact that it was a very one-sided game. The more England scored, the more they cheered. And Wales clearly created a couple of overlaps that just didn't have the execution to finish them off.
Yeah,
and it would have been nice if they could have at least
I'm smiling
to reward their effort, because there was a hell of a lot of effort there. But
I was pretty busy on Saturday, but I sat down, I was having a bit of lunch and watched 5 minutes of the England-Wales game, and it was the sort of tail end of the first half, and I must admit, I thought I'd shouted at the TV, I think, 3 or 4 times before I turned it off in frustration, because Wales just were unable to catch a ball and score. They literally,
all they
had
to do,
yeah, they had the overlap, obviously they got the advantage of having a player, an England player in the sin bin. All they had to do was really catch and dive over, and they failed on 2 occasions. I thought, oh, that's
the
my lunch over.
Is it the union mindset? I don't know, because they have to rewire their brains. And the problem we've got is, and it's an obvious problem, England's women are at a level that no other team in the Northern Hemisphere is at. Their main rivals are Australia and New Zealand. They're down there. We haven't got no money. We can't fly them over or anyone else. So we have to do with what we've got. But Wales and France will only improve. Yeah, Wales and France will only improve if they play England.
Mm.
And Cardiff Demons being a regular fixture in their division and playing in the Challenge Cup can only help. They're talking about an Origin series for the women. Now, whether you extend that to... I wouldn't put Wales in there, because if you have Wales versus Yorkshire and Yorkshire win 50-0, that looks terrible. But if you have Yorkshire versus Cardiff Demons or something, or call them South Wales or something that isn't the Welsh nationality...
Celtic Crusaders.
Then it will steal that, because that's not being used at the minute, is it? So call them something else, have a tri-series, or quad series, have Cumbria, whatever. You know, just Wales need to play games as well against a team that are not quite England, but not... So I don't know, but something's going
to
happen, so
I
that's
think
good.
You've got to persevere. Because if you look at where... I mean, I think Christian Wolfe made this point during the week. If you look at where Tonga were maybe 6 years ago, to the fact that they are now the first Tier 2 nation touring and playing a Tier 1 nation, that's a hell of an advance. So we can criticise the fact that they haven't been as good as perhaps we thought they might have been, because they did so well in the 2017 World Cup and then in 2019. But they haven't done it over here yet, because they're not used to playing in conditions and rules and stadiums over here. They have to bring all their best players to be at their best. But the more they play, the more they're going to reach that threshold. And, you know, we're the same with... You say, you know, who else are England going to play in the Northern Hemisphere? Well, how are we going to get up to the level of the Gillaroos and Kiwi Ferns?
Absolutely, yeah.
It has to be a pyramid system where you're always playing somebody slightly better than yourself, so that you know the benchmark you have to... Wales have taken a lot out of this. I saw the social media of Tom Brindle's speech to the women when they were on the field afterwards, saying it's fine margins. It might have blown out a bit at the end, but there's a lot of what we're doing is exactly where we need to be. The fact that they could play 2 games in 2 weeks against 2 nations that are higher than them in the rankings, their first ever proper trip abroad, not counting Ireland, and to come back from that where they've had a very creditable result, to then play against the best team in this part of the world. And rugby league is a cruel game. You can make 5 great tackles in a set of 6 and concede on the last one. They're moving in the right direction. There's a lot of buy-in amongst the Welsh players. Some of them are very naive when it comes to the nous of the sport, but they're absolutely passionate about the shirt.
15 of the 18 Welsh born.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Have they explored the grandparent rule?
I assume they have. Well, they must have, because we had Georgie Taylor on last week.
Well, I listened to some of that.
I guess it's... That can go one of 2 ways again, can't it?
But also, they were missing their best player in Bethan Dainton. You know, clearly, and she's the one that a lot of them look up to. She plays in Super League at a level whereby she's winning Player of the Match awards every other week. She just wasn't quite fit, having got injured in the French game, to play at Headingley, which would have been on her home ground. You need those players.
Yeah, and by the way, England are far from the finished product.
No,
I mean, you know, the short time I watched the game, England were obviously down to 12, but they still packed a full scrum. I thought, well, come on, that's naive in the extreme. And then at the next scrum, they were almost told you don't need to pack everybody. And then there was a whole kerfuffle about who was in the scrum and who wasn't. Then they didn't have a defending scrum half, and it just seemed chaotic, as though nobody was really out there on the pitch controlling that and being switched on to what was happening. Caitlin Beavers shot out the line, which should have resulted in a try to Wales, quite honestly. So there were some mistakes in there in that performance, despite the fact they went on and you know, what was it, 16-0 it finished?
And the other thing about Wales not having Bethan Dayton is England had Georgia Roach, who's just come off winning an NRLW Grand Final, is clearly playing at a level probably even higher than some of her other England colleagues, which is no disrespect to them, but to be successful in the NRLW, you've got to be something really, really special. It's all about getting your best players out there as often as you can, wearing that shirt, being proud to wear it. And the more that Wales play and get those kind of players, then they've already proved they can be competitive with France. If we could get to almost a tri-nations between England, Wales and France in the women, where the standard was going up all the time, England can use it as well to blood some of their younger players, which again can only give them greater depth when they need it. They're going over to play the Gillaroos and the Kiwi Ferns. It's great.
I think Wales lost their captain with a concussion as well early on. I mean, you were there, I don't know why I'm asking you.
I was.
Oh, you were there. I can't remember if you were in the shop.
Two jobs at the same time.
I think it was their captain that lost with concussion.
Yes, Shawnee Davis.
Yeah, so that's obviously.
Who just come back from 2 years out. You know, she's another great story. So I just think we can overanalyse the action, but the fact is, having this 2 or 3 week period of almost constant international rugby league has been really good for the sport.
I also think it's right that we are able to be critical of what we see on the field in the women's game, because we don't want to fall into the trap of going everything's great and everything's this and that and the other, because if you're not critical, then you're lying to the audience.
Mm.
Well, I'm sure the coaching staff will be having those conversations. That one of a couple of things that I mentioned there in the space of a few minutes to watch the game. They will be having those conversations with the players for sure. But I think you're right. That's
from
my point of view. I think sometimes you can end up being cheerleaders if you're not too careful. I want to support, and I think it's right to support the women's game. But equally, it should be done with some positive
but I also think that the
constructive criticism.
The women's game is going to improve because now we know that York are starting to pay their players.
12 of them now. 12.
You'd be annoyed if you weren't in that 12, right?
We've got to have somebody for Richie Milo as well. I've got to mention him in a bit.
And the Super League is going to improve in standard.
And it has improved. There's no doubt about that. It's improved over the last few
years. And I do think there is a plan at some point to bring London and Cardiff into it. So that's going to help the Welsh. So there's going to be more people playing in Super League who are eligible to play for Wales and Scotland and Ireland. So,
it's going to take time. It's going to take a number of years.
Shall I say something controversial? I'll say something controversial now. This is top three women's Super League next year in this order, right? Number one, York. Number two, Leeds.
It's not that controversial at the moment.
Number three, Wigan.
So you're predicting that St Helens will not be the powerhouse that they've been.
Well, Shauna Hoyle has officially signed for Leeds. Who'd have thunk it?
Has she?
Yeah, they've just announced it. Surely they must have run it by you first.
I didn't know when they were going to announce it. I think you'll find it might have been in there.
Might be the first of many going from St Helens to other teams. But we'll see on that. What was I going to say about...
So you've gone early there. We're still in 2023.
Well, doesn't matter. I don't want to upset County Generals anymore. She's on the telly. She might be able to get some work.
Is that what we're doing next week? Predictions for the 24 season.
There can't be many more moves, can there? But I'm not going to make a prediction about the men's suit. Obviously, it probably went Saints this year or something. Paul says St Helens again. Well, Paul, I will probably be wrong because I usually am. If that game hadn't existed, it wouldn't have been on telly. It wouldn't have been a repeat of Bargain Hunt or something. Same with the wheelchair game yesterday. If that hadn't have existed, it wouldn't have been on telly.
The viewing figures we gather for the wheelchair, I haven't seen for the women's game, about 250,000 people.
Mm-hmm. When
you think, again, you've got to put all this in historical perspective. We're talking about the women's game and how Tonga have, in a very short space of time. When you also factor in the fact that we almost lost a year and a half with COVID in the middle of that, when you look at where the wheelchair game has been played and how it was structured, to getting 250,000 people watching on a BBC channel on a Sunday afternoon.
BBC Two as well.
It's astonishing.
Yeah, I agree. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I did. It was a shame I couldn't get there, but I'd have enjoyed it in person. But it comes across. It's a great sport for TV, I think.
And the way it was configured, I thought the FD Arena would be a bit special, but to have the audience above elevators. The pitch, great atmosphere, must have looked great on television. team probably need to do a little bit more in the early
The slight downside by having the crowd elevated is that you lose a lot, some of the crowd in the TV picture. But, you know, I've seen pictures of people sitting in the stand looking at the, down at the...
It was amazing to walk in.
It is a pitch. Don't call it a court, you get in trouble for that.
You know, I thought it looked really, really good.
Rugby League on TV, I don't know where they get the figures from, but... they're always right. I'm not saying they don't get them right. I'm just saying they don't know where they get them from. But women's match got average 176,000 with 220,000 peak. And whether that's good or not depends on what the broadcaster wants and what the Rugby Football League thought they would get. So, but again, it's 100,000 people wouldn't be watching Rugby League at that point if that game hadn't existed.
If that wheelchair figure of around 250,000 is right, we struggle to get 250,000 for a men's Super League. Now, I know you're not comparing the same broadcasting strands. Yeah. One's terrestrial, one's not. It's satellite. But 250,000 people watching a game that a lot of them will still have been unfamiliar with. It's just such a great building block. And again, we should be saying, right, OK, we know that the England wheelchair team are going to France in 3 weeks. Great. I can't wait to see whatever footage they get back of that. But when's the next home international? Yeah. Where is it? Can I get a ticket?
There's definitely a market for the wheelchair.
Yeah, because, all those people that came out of the arena, if you'd have said to them, would you like to buy a ticket for an event in a year's time, they'd have gone, oh, yeah.
Because what we've just talked about between England and Wales in terms of the women, it's there already in terms of the wheelchair, isn't it? The competitiveness between those two teams is tremendous.
But again, the same applies. If England was to play Wales at the moment or Scotland at the moment, there's that gap. But they've got to play them to enable them to be...
So a three-test series against France next autumn, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
and I know we I don't know where you'd play them all again, but we've got this pitch now. You can see them taking it up in the background. And
you at least play at home and away, don't you? Mm. If you can't, you know, because of logistics of hosting players for Leeds, 3 weeks, etc. But
first test Leeds, second test Marseille, third test London. Coffee box. Great side, RFL. Go on, sign your checks.
But I think, there are commercial partners out there that would be prepared to underwrite that. Who we've said it before, probably are not that interested in the running game. It's how do you cultivate them? It goes back to exactly what we said at the beginning of this. If you can map out who's going to be playing when and where over a long period. I mean, the French, who I thought gave a brilliant press conference afterwards, bearing in mind that the one after the World Cup final was 20 minutes of ranting. This was very constructive.
Robert, I love him.
He was talking
half a trophy named after him.
They were talking about this is their first building block to 2026. And you're going, great, what are the others? When are you playing? Yeah. Who are you playing? Can we play England, you know, at least once a year guaranteed, written in?
The Armchair Rugby World Cup, looking forward to it. It's what Google Translate tells me, that's what the French...
Yeah, they call it Armchair Rugby.
Armchair Rugby, brilliant. More on that in a minute, because here's some messages.
Not more breaking news.
No.
Richie Milner signed for York.
He has signed for York, hasn't he? That's all about.
Kevin Lynette's retired.
Who has?
Kane Linnett.
All right.
Which means Kalepi Tangino will be going to KL.
From Wakefield.
Yes.
Surely our big money man can keep him, surely.
Well,
I'll listen to Radio Leeds to find out.
I expect that's already a done deal, subject to Linnett retiring, which he now has.
Paul has been on. Good evening, gentlemen. I watched my first wheelchair game yesterday, and now I'm a convert. Brilliant spectacle. Kevin asked him how many were there. And I can tell you, Paul, I can tell you, Kevin, even, it was 2,311. Because they held up a bit of... How it works is someone comes around the press box with a bit of paper saying these are the number of people there. 2,311. So there you go. It looks good on the telly. It looked good in real life. I mean, we were sat behind the post, so we didn't have the best of views. You would have a better one if you paid for it, which is good because, you know.
The other thing as well is the acoustics at the FD Arena, because it's a new build, are fantastic. So again, all the light show and the sounds before the game even started was absolutely top notch. I think you said it, of all the internationals we've seen this autumn, that's the one that felt like an event. Yeah. And if we're going for the event goer, it would be an attraction. I can see why, you know,
it's
you
also
your
it's also given the time of year, it's actually quite
indoors.
You know, it's indoors.
It wasn't cold.
Yeah.
so
it's not wet, it's not cold. Damp.
Apologies to the podcast listener who hate me opening the paper, but
they'll be hearing me opening the parking.
You wouldn't be agreeing with this person then who says, surely it's now time not only to combine the two divisions, but also, I thought we had three, but also to go back to winter rugby with all games to be played on a Sunday.
Zero.
This would encourage the supporters of Super League clubs to go and see their future stars of rugby league play their trade. They're going to have their own grand final played before the Super League grand final or the Challenge Cup final, not afterwards when everyone has gone home. Now you can't change it. The reality for the majority of these clubs is not the ambition of competing in Super League. Well, according to the people whinging about IMG, it is. But to remain viable and win as many games as possible and hopefully produce new talent as well as representing their local town. What just, a lot just, of nonsense.
Just on, and I know we're not going to go back to it because we don't need to, but on the principle of grading, how good is it to see clubs like York signing people like Richie Myler in the knowledge that the likelihood, given their illustrative grading at the moment, is they're not going to be into, it's not stopping ambitious clubs trying to be the best they can be. London are saying the same, you know, the ones that are going to be disadvantaged theoretically in terms of their grading, it's not stopping them trying to be a better club, and surely that's what it's all about.
I'm going to have to get some LED boards for here, aren't I?
Yeah. Well, I read with interest Barrows because they went into real detail,
brilliant.
Didn't they?
That was a brilliant statement. And again, they're appealing to the local council, saying, you know, we're doing what we can do, but when are you going to move as a stadium?
Yeah, and, you know, speaking with my professional property hat on.
There for the podcast.
If people want any advice about how to bring development forward, be that stadia, then
you
do
need
get
to
in
be
touch.
On our LED board, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm getting out the park.
But Barrow as a town has got a lot of money coming its way from the government.
Were,
you know,
that's what they were saying about BAE, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're getting a huge amount of money in relation to building new submarines. I think it's part of the agreement that they formed with, was it America and Australia?
Yeah,
I think it's probably part of that.
Kevin sent them. I had to check because Kevin said, breaking news. Helen Skelton is taking over from Holly Willoughby on this morning. I have to check to see if it's real, but apparently it's not. Because I've heard there's no more Rugby League on Channel 4. Is this right? Could be, or it might not be. It might not be. We don't know. Just because someone posts something on Instagram. Wilson hasn't done it. Wilson's not on social media.
He's in Germany, isn't he?
Yeah,
watching the NFL.
He hasn't said, or Danica.
They haven't heard anything.
Yeah, so we don't know. We'll find out when we find out. The door is open.
Shouldn't it?
The door is open. The ASMR people, I love this crunching of parking. Mm. We might go into that over the winter, just do ASMR videos because they do well on YouTube. Although I don't think with three blokes that are over 40, more women in their 20s. Carthel says, Germany win 54-10 against Poland in front of over 500 people and it was freezing. I want test matches in the summer. No, we don't get overexcited defeating Poland, Carsten. Yeah, because no one's got in the winter. I know football is, but that's, you know, and that other one, the other one. But you know.
I mean, talking of opportunity, Norway hosted Greece in a men's senior international. Mike Smale refereed it. I mean, it's great for him as well to have internationals helping his development. And how good is it for the players? I mean, the match report that came back said it had been an attractive and free-flowing game because the referee was used to handling the players at Super League level. Well, again, isn't this what International Rugby League is all about, that everybody benefits out of it?
Yeah, well, I was offered the opportunity to actually referee an international some months ago, but it would have been in the last few weeks, and I wasn't massively keen on doing it because it's an opportunity for an up-and-coming referee to get some experience at that level. But for some of those organisations, I think they probably would have felt that it would have been good for them to have somebody with, you know, Super League experience as a
bit of
a name.
So while you were in South Africa, there?
No, it wasn't South Africa.
We got Kenya.
No, it was a European game, but yeah, I mean, you know, I'll never say never, but I'd rather see, you know, people with, that opportunity to go and travel and referee abroad. I mean, I remember going to Venice to referee, believe it or not.
Was that England, France, Great Britain, France?
It was a Bala. It was like a Bala tour.
Right.
It was like a sevens tournament because I think they had it. Didn't they have wasn't there a tour this year?
Mm-hmm.
And there were sad circumstances surrounding that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went quite a number of years ago and did that. But
why were England playing not Brazil at the same time as England men were playing on the telly and England women? Who scheduled that? Who allowed that to happen?
It's a non-sanctioned game, so I'm not even sure we should give it the oxygen and publicity, if I'm being honest. It certainly wasn't Brazil, either.
No. Fancy retraining as a wheelchair rugby league referee? Well, not after as much running.
It's interesting you say that, because somebody's already contacted me and said, do you fancy giving it a go? And I thought, well, I've just finished refereeing. I don't think that will pass muster at
all.
What,
that, said, that, you know, 2,300 people in the Leeds Arena booing David Butler yesterday. That was
yeah. I thought that was pretty gentle, to be fair, wasn't it? I was waiting for the chance to go around and things to be thrown. Given that elevation, you had quite a good vantage point, didn't you, to start hauling the things through the air at the officials. Not that I'm suggesting that should happen. I mean, I don't imagine most people would know why they were booing, really, because
Having spoken to him this morning, it has been reviewed, and the only thing that is potentially contentious was whether it was a forward pass or not.
The referees made less
mistakes than the players, apparently, correctly given.
Yeah, there was there appeared to be a missed penalty which went in England's favour when they were saying on the TV, and I didn't know anything about this, but when they have the tag removed, they have to now retag. Prior to basically playing the ball, and I think that's a new international or a new law that's sort of come in, and so it was sort of catching one or two of the players out as they attempted to re-tag. The tag didn't stick and it fell off.
Well, this is the other controversy, that France were apparently using
sticky tags.
Velcro.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, someone was saying their Velcro was sticky.
Conspiracy.
I know, which is great.
And the tags were dark, so they should be contrasting to their kit. But
as Phil Roberts pointed out, because I mentioned this in a jerky fashion, because the possibility, says Phil, who should know these things, he's won a World Cup. The possibility is that England players were deliberately delaying removing the tag to control the ruck.
Exactly.
Right. Sean Wayne, France anticipated this and used it to create a lot of offloads in second phase, especially in the first half.
100%. There you go. Is what the word was coming back.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They just looked to lose their composure a little bit, England, in the game. They got frustrated, didn't they?
They didn't start off with the sufficient intensity to stop the French offload, and once they'd gone behind, it was almost like we're always playing catch up.
Yeah, they couldn't stem the tide at one, really.
Jack Brown made a huge difference when he came on, but he was still suffering from jet lag, having only just flown in from Queensland. So the plan was always to just play him for a half, and you could see that.
It was a great contest, though. I really, really enjoyed it.
And they won the second half. Yeah. And it got to, again, 2 minutes from time before you knew who was going to win.
Absolutely.
Which is what you want.
Andy thinks the difference between the two teams was the French ability to manoeuvre the chair and their body in a way that made it incredibly difficult for the smaller, lighter England players to get to their tags, allowing them to keep the ball alive with an offload. England's game is attacking game is built around the speed of lighter, smaller players like Jack Brown, Nathan Collins and Rob Hawkins, but it has its drawbacks against bigger opponents. Now we're all analysing it. Tom Coyne, we're all coming for your job now. So it's great that we have this analytical thing about something that we didn't know much about before. Now we can watch and we understand what's going on.
There was a point made in commentary though about the physicality of the sport, but what people don't probably talk about quite as much is the skill, and there's a high level of skill involved. The ability to wheel that wheelchair as quickly as they do whilst trying to catch or pass, or even trying to evade being tackled by swerving in the seat, which is not good for people on the podcast, but I'm now swerving in my seat, but trying to avoid by lifting your arm the tag from being removed. There's all sorts of little sort of tactics at play.
Watching them warm up, where they're virtually individually doing slaloms in the chair at a ridiculous speed. To control a wheelchair like that is just and again, it raises this philosophical argument about how many disabled people or permanent wheelchair users do you have in the team, or is it just your ability to control the wheelchair because that's the piece of sport and equipment? It's that really interesting point, the sport, where the philosophy of what it is against the spectacle that it has become, it's difficult to marry the two. The French made a commitment afterwards that every test match they're going to play from now on will have one permanent wheelchair user as part of their five on the pitch at any one time. And even when Vargas was withdrawn, another permanent wheelchair user went on. And that's the way they want to play it. And I think there will be some rule amendments to bring nations closer together.
I think there's merit in that. Ultimately, it was probably born out of that, and when you listen to the stories on the Storyville documentary, there's some pretty tragic stories there, and people that physically couldn't play the running game, and therefore there's an alternative. So, and I get that it's inclusive, you can be male, female, or able-bodied, or otherwise, but I think if you're not careful, it it may become where people who have a permanent disability are almost excluded from it because of their physical limitations, and that's surely against the spirit of the sport.
France did that yesterday and won. But I think what we're looking at is a division between the elite level of the sport, which has certain requirements, and the community level of the sport, which is open to anyone and everyone. And is that any different in any other sport? You know, most people cannot play top elite level sport, whether it's tennis like Andy Murray or, you know, it is by its nature exclusive because of your ability to play it.
Yeah, stick me in a wheelchair, I'm not going to be any good for the Black Champions, and said he wouldn't pick me.
It's supposed
to be inclusive, man.
No,
he's on video.
I think he looked at you and said it's inclusive, but not for people that haven't got any talent.
Not for people that are rubbish.
But I think it. What was great yesterday was it maintained that tradition of rivalry as well. So already we're talking about, oh, I can't wait for Marseille on the 25th of November, when we wondered why the trophy was presented yesterday. Great for the television to always have a trophy presentation, but they're playing each other again in 3 weeks. Should it have been over the aggregate of the two? The reply we were given is it's a trophy that is played for in perpetuity. So whenever these two nations meet, those two people who founded the sport should be commemorated. So France may only hold this for 3 weeks if England can win in Marseille.
Right.
But that makes sense when you think about it.
But why did England and Wales not play for a trophy when England and France did in the mid-season international at Warrington? I mean, granted, it was some crappy trophy at Red Hall.
Well, going back to the men's game, great that the Player of the Series Award was named after somebody, and the person it was named after sounded like a genuine pioneer, a Tongan who came over and played over here, who Nick Alafihi's father, which I don't think many people would have known much about him, and it's great that he gets commemorated.
I think many might be overstating it.
All right, any?
We need to get the... Are we doing the Dave Hadfield Trophy based on the Steve Mascot season last week? It makes things up. I mean, we could probably get... And Harry Smith came and spoke to us for 3 minutes before Christian Wolf came in and said, some more work coming, lads, make some more plans. He didn't, and that's paraphrasing, but not necessarily correctly paraphrasing. I should get a job as a Ripley journalist. So websites might employ me for that paraphrasing skill. It's away from my column. I've written 300 words so far. So
it's another 350 to go.
Yeah.
Well, actually another 850, so I can pare it back.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've not even watched that Super League documentary yet, so at least that will take up some of it. And I've only mentioned John Wilkin and Danica pretty much, so that's no good, is it? Should be mentioned again. It gets everywhere. Harry Newman. So, Sean Wayne, massive fan of him. He's going to sign for Wigan, actually, I don't know. But has he done what Sean Wayne has said, do this and you can play international rugby? And when other people, obviously, whose faces don't fit with Sean Wayne...
Jake Connor.
Well, you can say that. Maybe Sean Wayne has or hasn't spoken to them, I don't know. But he sends messages out, doesn't he, via the rugby league media, say, you know, do this, do that, do this. He's obviously had a word with Harry Newman, who's got a reputation. Whether that's fair or not, I don't know. You have to ask James Bentley. But he seems to have listened, learned, and impressed Sean Wayne. And now Leeds are getting back a better player. It's all thanks to Sean Wayne. So, you know, well done to him.
I think that element of it, slightly disrespectful. I think Sean Wayne did pull back a little bit from that when he first said it. Because he did say after the game on Saturday, Leeds have done a great job with Harry Newman. So it's not just that
not just Sean
sending him back as a better player. I think the you've got to look at it from Harry's point of view rather than Sean's. He wants to be in that England squad. If he wants to be in that England squad, then he's got to behave in a manner in which the current England coach is going to pick him and include him in that England squad. So he would have looked at his behaviour and said, if Sean Wayne says I need to jump on my left foot all the time, that's exactly what I'll do. But also, Harry knows that at some point in the not too distant future, there may be an opportunity for him to play in the NRL. And I'm not wishing that he goes, because I clearly he's a great talent. That I want him to be a game breaker over here, particularly if he happens to be wearing blue and amber. I wouldn't mind that. But I think Harry knows that he's at an age, 23, where if he's ever going to be picked up in the NRL, A, he needs to perform in an international at a consistently high level, and he needs to prove to them that his temperament is such that when he's put under even more pressure than he would be in Super League, that he can handle it. So I just think he's maturing a bit more as a person, and he clearly knows perhaps what he needs to do to be where he wants to be. And yeah, Sean Wayne will have a part to play in that, but it's down to Harry.
Hair pulling. What's that all about? That's nuts. What's that going on?
Oh, we've seen it before, haven't we? It was the right decision to put them...
Not normally in a men's game, though.
We've still, probably still seen it somewhere, haven't we? It was the right decision to Simbin. I don't think it was the right decision to Simbin, a Tongan player, for running in, because, as they rightly pointed out on TV, basically most players ran in. And the player that got Simbin for running in really didn't do anything other than what the others had done. So I think sometimes it's a danger as a referee that you sort of being seen to be balanced by, you know...
What, like the BBC's political coverage?
Oh, dear. So, yeah, it was an easy... that was an easy yellow card for me, the hair pulling. They just... I don't know really what he was reacting to. It was just a massive hit, wasn't it? But it looked a legal hit to me. And he'd been hit once before off the kickoff.
I'm just imagining if Vicky Molyneux had been sent off on a final. never shown a yellow card in her career. Last game for England, could have got sent off.
Yeah, I missed the yellow card. I just tuned in as the yellow card was given in towards the end of the first half. Is that what that was?
It was a yellow, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it was high.
Right.
She.
But that was a French referee in that game. He'd come across...
Oh, a neutral referee? Hang on.
Yeah, he'd come across earlier in the year, I think. I think it was part of that group that you reported on in the magazine. Enzo... I'm not going to say his surname because I'll get it wrong. Perret, I think. He's been involved on sort of championship touch lines, I think, and in goals on Super League and when Toulouse were in and that sort of stuff when Catalan are not on TV. So that was a, you know, good opportunity for a young French referee to travel across to the UK and referee on TV with a video referee. I don't know if a video referee was called into action or not.
For Caitlin Beaver's try.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, good opportunity for him.
I'm trying to think what else has happened this week. I know we only had a handful of games, so... Oh, we haven't talked about Australia losing yet, have we? So let's celebrate...
Not in enough detail.
Let's celebrate Australia losing. I woke up on Saturday morning to get ready to go to Headingley, the home of Rugby League. As we now are supposed to call it, AMT, Headingley Rugby Stadium.
I think it's just now known as the Venue of Legends.
Or Headingley, as it's known. Oh, Phil, when are you starting your tours? Tour guide, is this what happens if you can't... If Gary Hetherington's busy before new, is that what happens? Australia.
They were a lovely group.
I woke up, put the TV on, I thought, well, I can't watch the whole game, I haven't got time, so I'll fast forward to the end. 13, have they messed up the graphic? What's going on? 30-0?
Biggest ever defeat.
Australia's going to be signing up all those Tongans and
Tongans. I think we need to mention that again. Biggest ever defeat.
Ever.
In their history.
Sure, it's not to us, isn't it? But
And having seen, like you, didn't get up at 4:30 in the morning to watch it live, but having seen extended highlights, totally and utterly deserved. No complaints. Michael Maguire. The amazing thing about the two internationals this weekend was that they were the reverse of the internationals the previous weekend. So New Zealand had been beaten in Melbourne, and everybody went, it'd be a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, what bother getting up, yeah?
Turned it round. PNG been heavily beaten by Fiji. Turned it round. Fantastic. Just the emotion of somebody like James Fisher-Harris, who, I don't know if you've refereed him, doesn't say a lot.
No, I don't think so. I might have done, but...
Yeah, was captain of that team. Will go down in history as leading a group of men to their biggest ever victory over Australia since 1908, when they first played against each other. Just the raw emotion that it meant to all of them. And the difficulties that New Zealand Rugby League has had in the COVID period, where the Warriors had to play all their games in Australia and couldn't really build on some of the 2017 World Cup, 2019 international games. It's just a massive boost, because coming out of it is people like Mal Meninga, who are embarrassed, saying, we want redemption. Well, if you want redemption, you're going to have to play some more international games, aren't you? So it's exactly what we want. And people like Cameron Munster saying, yeah, we may have been slightly complacent, but don't look any further than the fact that it means as much for us to pull on this jersey as it does the New Zealanders. Well, okay, let's pull it on a little more often then, if we can. It's just brilliant.
So how do we convince Peter Melandis, when he's not hobnobbing Joe Biden,
I think they're committed. I think the NRL or the ARLC, have underwritten the Pacific Championships, together with government funding that they've got, because PNG is seen as politically strategic in that part of the world. But they put it into the international game. They haven't said, oh, let's take some more of our domestic games into it. They want those nations to stand on their own two feet and be competitive. They're talking about a PNG team now being the 18th team in the NRL.
There's not in the Papua New Guinean Hunters.
Cairns-based PNG. But they're also, you know, now have the Fijian Silk Tails in the level underneath in the New South Wales competition. There is a genuine feel for expansion at the moment, and that has to have an international dimension to it. Be interesting to see what happens in Las Vegas, not just with the NRL club games and the impact that may have, but USA Wheelchair have now pulled out of playing the Australian wheelchair team, but there is talk of them being replaced, and a wheelchair itself is more important than the nation as they play it. So let's have a three-match Ashes series in Las Vegas.
You heard it here last.
You can throw one of them.
Yeah, send you on that. I still won't have my passport, so I still won't be there. But you know, only a week in Vegas, that'd be an experience. It's not quite Summer Bash, is it? Well, the Summer Bash has gone, hasn't it? That's,
well, again, rumour at the moment. Had not been announced, but I wouldn't be surprised.
To the shock of no one who's been to the last time, I mean, didn't even bother going to York, and that's no knock on York. But
again, if there's one round that has duplicate fixtures in it, just get rid of the round. If it's not commercially viable, you've absolutely no reason to have it.
Very nice trophy Papua New Guinea got picked up as well, wasn't it?
Best trophy in international rugby league. Looks like an elephant's ear.
And now your man, Reece Martin, the most capped Cummel ever.
Some conjecture about that.
Oh, is this one of these things where...
That's come from PNG.
Right. Is this like Wales, when they can't leave those games?
The rugby league record keepers
thing.
Not quite so sure. Oh, right. But it's out there, so we're going with it.
Right. So if we say things often enough, people will believe them. Like listening figures, people will believe them. If they don't unsubscribe to our YouTube channel. We just hit 3,500. If it goes down, I won't be happy. Am I doing a shirt review like last year, Kevin? Yes, I will be. I mean, I forgot last year, didn't I? I didn't bother doing it. But I'm very pleased Leeds have brought out their blue and red away kit, so it makes me feel like I can support the women without being too disloyal. Not that I do, of course, because I'm completely neutral. But is there any other, apart from Richie Mallow going to York, is there anything else happening? Sam Powell's going to Moynton, apparently.
And Toby King.
Moynton signing all the hookers.
To St Helens.
Oh.
Rumoured.
Oh, okay.
That he's moving from Warrington to Saints to allow Sam Powell to come into Warrington. Rumour. Richie Myler going to free up some salary cap so that, rumour, Tom Burgess can sign for Leeds.
Did we cover Morgan Smithies last week?
Probably not.
No, because that came out Tuesday, didn't it? I think he came out just before...
I don't think it's a surprise, is it, that he's gone? Because I think there was a strong rumour that he was going. I wasn't sure where he was going, but Canberra is the destination, isn't it?
Ideal replacement for Elliot Whitehead, who's going to be in his final year. They're very similar in the way they approach the game. Really hard workers, do all the unsung stuff that we don't appreciate. But
it's like Liam Farrell, proto Liam Farrell. Jimmy Connors going to York. I think we knew that, Carson. I know you just told me.
Yeah,
he's German.
He's already signed.
Said that before. Riley Dean's off to the North Queensland Cowboys. So he's
signed.
Sean Hall going to Leeds. We've mentioned that, Tony. Sean Hall's going to Leeds. Other people to follow. Apparently,
Riley Dean, I think, is going to the Mackay Cutters, so that he, as the feeder club for North Queensland, he can show that he's good enough to step up if needed, which is a great move for him. I think he's been shoddily treated.
Mm. He's been everywhere, hasn't he? Without having any kind of
without getting a run.
No,
but clearly, if he's good enough for an NRL club to want to see how good he is, then have Warrington wasted the opportunity of having him as their first choice halfback?
I mean, Tony, if you want some women's rugby league transfer news, I think big news this week.
More to come.
I mean, I can just say that anyway. If I knew anything or not, because no, it doesn't matter. Because no one knows. Big news coming in rugby league.
Huddersfield have got a new full time women's coach.
There you go. Well, that's the other thing is that some of the Wigan players didn't know who Denny Spetz was, which I think is A, amusing, and B, it's quite sad because it means we're old. So, I had to check and spell his name right because it was. I got confused with him
and
Dennis Bergkamp, because Dennis Bergkamp wanted to be named after Dennis Law or his parents.
Oh, I thought you were so much known after Dennis Betts.
No, yeah, named after Dennis Betts. Because Dennis Law won in, but they put two in. And I thought, is that the same with Dennis Betts? No, it's just one in. I assume for the same reason, but I don't know. It would be unlike Warrington to mess up an opportunity, says Paul. Oh, a bit harsh. See, since kit launch, like fireworks and fire breathers. I think it was a kind of a offshoot of a firework display, but Wakefield looked like France.
Which is better than
nice kit. Leeds.
Nice
yeah,
kit.
It is. Leeds.
Everybody's like Leeds. Interviewing the new owner of Wakefield, who's been very, very bullish.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the things I was going to mention about the impact of IMG that perhaps isn't being seen.
IGM.
Is, I think, virtually every club's social media output is improving.
I've noticed
it's
that.
More innovative. They're looking at different ways of appealing to a younger and newer audience. They've all had IMG in and their digital department to help them come up with some ideas to make them more relevant to a new modern. That, I think, is having an impact. Wakefield are clearly launching their
got a YouTube channel.
Brilliant. You know, every club is stepping up, even the announcement of signings, the unveiling of kit. And it might not seem like a lot, but actually, how do you appeal to a new, different, younger audience? It's the periphery stuff. Mm-hmm. You're not going to change the product. You need people to see the product, to love the product, but how are you going to get them to watch the product in the first place? You put a really clever video or some innovative social media, and people are, I'd just like to know a little bit more about that guy or that team or that club. You know, Sheffield have been brilliant at it.
There's an interesting did you see it was the club who did, was it Whitehaven? No, don't get the right one. Workington had a player frying some chips. Top stuff.
This is what they want.
It is, because the place called Big Mac, so the Big Mac and fries, you say. It's clever, I think. The social media thing, and I happened upon a discussion about, you know, the other ones, the rugby union people, you've heard of them. If the Harry Newman's tribes could have been scored by the Barbarians, we wouldn't hear the end of it. But they've just had a World Cup, apparently. I don't know if you saw it. Like the Cricket World Cup, which is still on. England, not still on. They've been taking down YouTube channels and videos that have used their content, which, I mean, how you can find any bloody highlights in it, I don't know. He's had a kick. Well, it's good, isn't it? I mean, we don't do that, which I don't know where. I'm kind of siding with World Rugby on this, because I'm not sure you should. Anyone can. It's not. It shouldn't be a free for all. Everyone shouldn't be allowed to just nick stuff. Even though I used the Wales trial last week, but I didn't put Wales rugby league on the video. You know, I'm not sure everyone should be allowed to nick stuff for their own purposes. And it's quite amusing when clubs retweet videos of player highlights, and it's done by someone on YouTube. Think, well, hang on a minute. They haven't got the right to use that. Not everyone should be using Sky Sports material willy nilly, nor the BBC. But there has to be a fine line between these things. I don't know how we do it. Clubs can do whatever they want, of course, but how do you engage, how do you get other people to engage? I don't know if you need, how does independent media do it? I don't know, because if I wanted to use some Super League highlights, I should have to pay to use them, because, you know, I haven't created the content.
But knowing that you can't, you need to be more innovative. And I think even in normal advertising, there are some adverts where you think, I don't know who they've got to write this, because I don't understand the message that they're putting out. There's some people who live in a catalogue world at the moment that try and break out. Like, what is the point? What are you actually trying to sell?
Now we have become old men pointing at clouds.
No, but seriously, I don't know the product that they're trying to sell. It's so obtuse that it's ridiculous. But there are ways that some clubs are doing a really good job of either tempting you to come back and get some more, or hinting at signings, or unveiling shoulders of kits, and it's looking a lot more professional. And I think a lot of younger people are getting involved in the production of it, which is exactly what
we want. Say the working video with the frying the chips got no traction whatsoever. That doesn't mean it's not a good idea.
Yeah,
because you can never work out what's going to work on the internet or not. It's just some things take flight and some things don't. So I'd rather clubs try things, be a bit different, stick their tongue in their cheek and have a go, then maybe it's a picture of a new signing holding up a shirt or whatever. I don't know. How can we make refereeing? How do we make the referees department do some exciting videos? I mean, there's not got anyone to do that.
We need to know what their personalities are. Yeah. We've said that before.
Have they got personalities, James? Since you've left, have they got anyone?
They have. An interesting, eclectic bunch, as you can imagine. I always think it's interesting when people take up the whistles to why they take up the whistle, and it attracts a wide range of people. And we're all, I always say we're all weird, but some are more weird than others. But I just think the more people speak in situations like this and others, and I think I've floated the idea before, I think in the magazine, about getting a sort of an ex player to go in and do a referee's course and take up the whistle and see how challenging they find it or otherwise.
Do we know any ex-players? we could ask her, but she's always busy. She's some launch of something else.
She's playing now as well.
I know.
Life all for a kid.
What's that going on? She's bashing people as well.
Good.
I know Sky are strict, says Kevin, regarding the boxing and YouTubers using their footage. Don't think they're bothered with the rugby league. I think you're right. Carson says the American leagues made it free for all. As long as you don't want money, the more content about your league, the better. It's the opposite view to me. I mean, not necessarily the opposite view to what I think, Carson. I just think got to be careful with what you allow people to do with things. You can't just be a free for all. Especially the American leagues have so much money coming into them that they can do whatever they want. Regardless of some Herbert on YouTube making a channel about baseball, say, they're still going to get billions of pounds from their TV rights deals. We're not going to get that. So we have to be careful with how we use our stuff and who uses it. But Carson, you might be able to subscribe to all the games next year anyway, apparently. So will you be putting down your however much? I think the problem we're going to have is, and this was a discussion in the press room on Saturday, is will people pay? Well, people have got in the habit of not paying on top of what they pay. So if you ask someone to pay £10 for a stream, will they pay it?
It depends what you get. Because nobody objected to paying £10 yesterday to see the wheelchair, and every one of them, if you just said, would you pay £15 to watch that, they'd have said yes.
They won't pay £2.90 for a bottle of water, though.
£7.50 for picking mints.
How do you always go out of business? Oh, everyone was nicking it, wasn't it? That's the problem.
Don't judge everyone by your standards.
Well, it's next to the cinema in Wakefield, so that was the problem with it. I was going to say, is there any other news? There isn't any other news, is there?
I think it's great that I know I bang on about it a lot, but I do think it's great that the first women's internationals have been played in Africa. Because, again, it's not about who won, and it happened to be Nigeria won both games against Ghana. It's about empowerment of females, and the more you speak to the people that are involved in playing, it's so much more than a result. So again, I think we need to celebrate that as a sport, that we are breaking down barriers in a continent where it's really difficult. PNG women, I mean, you've seen the Power Mary film. It doesn't just make a difference to those who play that enjoy it. It's actually changing society in many ways. And that's absolutely fantastic.
One can only hope that innocent Adizi never gets in trouble with the referee.
And the success as well. They've got some fantastic names
on the bench.
And we're not being patronising to say they've got some fantastic names. They just have some fantastic names.
It's super. We need better names in rugby. That's what we need.
Yeah, it's like, I think we've mentioned this before. It's like when I got married, Stephen took my surname, but I could have taken Stephen's surname, which is Wright. So imagine a referee called Mr. Wright.
Absolutely perfect.
Yeah. And why didn't you do that? I mean, come on now. That'd been perfect.
Just for one season.
Oh, then everyone would have, That was the strange thing about yesterday's game, and it was pointed out by many, was the near silence for Nathan Collins kicking, or whoever was taking the kicks at that point, and booing for France, which was hilarious. But, do you want silence when you're kicking? Because you're not used to it, are you? You're not used to it being like that. It's that distracting. I thought it did distract him. It was all right with the boot, but I don't know. Hand.
I just thought the audience found the level that they wanted to support their team, and that's great.
Yeah, it was a touch pantomime, but that was funny.
Yeah, it's great.
It's good.
What referees and French people are there
for? And the player that they were booing on the French side, or France side, won the man of the match.
They didn't miss a kick, made no difference.
Hear his thoughts non-exclusively on our YouTube channel about the game. He had his brain in his head.
Yes.
What a great phrase that was.
He had his brain in his head rather than in the dressing room.
Is that some kind of French idiom?
Brilliant.
French. I want to know what he's in French. His brain in his head. Our brains definitely on our heads. I mean, I assume we'll be back next week. I don't know. It depends on if anything happens or.
Well, I'm sure we'll want to round up South Africa and Kenya.
Yeah. So if we're not back next week, we'll tell you we're not back. But
we'll get some guests in. We'll have a bit of a party.
Yeah, we're not going to finish.
Sausage rolls.
Can't finish. I mean, pre-season started now.
It's only about 7 weeks to the Boxing Day game.
Yeah, I'm not going. look at what you could have won. You come to Super League ground. Yeah. Well, I'm going next week. You know, we were asked, was it Paul saying, is there any money being pumped into Wakefield? Millions, Paul, apparently.
One and a half million.
Look what it gets you. Darryl Powell and some people. So, look forward to seeing that. Not losing the semi-finals of the playoffs. Which won't matter anyway, because it's on. The last thing about the IMG thing, people moaning about the mistakes or whatever has been made in this process, forgetting that this is a dry run for when it actually matters.
Yeah.
So if we get it wrong now, it's like in pre-season, combination's not working, can you? But it doesn't fill up the internet if you say that, does it? So we'll be back at some point with everything. Not everyone has their brains in their heads, lol, says Kevin. Some other parts of the body. On that bombshell, because I'm getting in trouble again.
We're parking to eat.
Yeah, we'll see you again soon, but thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming. Sports Social Podcast Network.